Education Work Session. Today is Tuesday, April 14th, 2026, and the time is 5:30 p.m. Jamie, can we have roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Heck.
Here.
Mr. Jenkins.
Here.
Ms. Myers.
Here.
Mr. Sabadini.
Here.
Mrs. Taurasi.
Here.
Mrs. Williams.
Here.
Can we please stand for the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we begin, please note that this meeting is being live streamed and recorded. There are two cameras in use this evening, one focused on the Board of Education and another one that may be used during any public commentary or presentations. By participating in this meeting, you acknowledge that you may be captured on video. Thank you for your understanding and for joining us tonight. Next up is discussion items. I'll turn it over to Superintendent Shaw.
Wonderful. Well, thank you and good evening, everybody. So tonight we have Dave Payne and his crew here. They're going to get into our 24/7 technology refresh and bond and sinking fund. It's one big presentation, and so he's just going to go through with that. So Dave, it's all yours.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw. I'm going to go ahead and we're going to kind of work as a team and go over basic presentation of the technology millage, work into some of the components of the technology. And our goal here is to really get you really involved in and make sure that any questions you may have are answered as far as how we spend our technology money, how we use it, how we refresh it, as well as we'll wrap up with some information on bond and sinking fund to get an update on
that. Oh, I'm working on it.
Do you need Dave to help you?
This is a test.
So the first part of our presentation, we would like to get into the technology millage. I'm playing both sides here. We're going to present the PowerPoint to the stream as well. So the technology millage, I want to go over first by talking about how we spend that money. Since 1997, I think when it first got voted in, our first tax revenue that we incurred was around $1.1 million. Since then, it's went up to about $1.7 million. And then when some changes were made where we had to give some of that money to the ISD and to some other areas, it reduced it a little. Now we're kind of back to about $1.7 million. When you look at the amount, about 50 to 60% of that money, depending on the year, is on staff. We have, right now, current 7 Monroe Public Schools staff members and a few other EduStaff contracted staff members as well. Total, I was going to be ready for that. We have 18 total staff members currently right now as part of the technology department. There is about 2.5 positions open. We just had a resignation. But that fluctuates based on need and time of the year. So, for instance, right now, we might not hire anyone because we're prepping for MSTEP. We have people trained, assigned. We don't really have a lot of time to bring someone in and take away from supporting some current district initiatives. Now, when we look at that, that's why I say when we look at that 55%, that's a pretty consistent number, but it does fluctuate, just so you know, up and down. And based on our revenue, that can go up and down as well. 25% of that is equipment, parts and supplies, software services. That's the part that we use to buy small pieces of technology, replace some technology. There might be an initiative at a building where they need several devices, but it's on a small scale. Software services, we might need to install some cables. We might need to renew a license. But for the most part, these are small purchases that is part of just to keep the department running. That last 20% is where you guys see a lot of those as far as major purchases on a cycle. So, for instance, this is a millage year. So we've been doing a lot of work since last fall looking how we're going to refresh our technology when the millage passes in May. So some of those things, like a couple weeks ago, you passed an E-rate purchase. That's money that's given to us on a five-year cycle. Same with the millage. So we try to budget accordingly. So a lot of those bigger purchases are saved for that refresh cycle. And some of them are lease commitments. So one of the practices in this district since probably 2002 is to try to keep the technology at an even level. So the curriculum departments, when they're purchasing software, they know where we're going to be and we can support it at all levels. It's not five-year-old computers at this building, brand new computers here, you know, computers that probably don't work as well at other buildings. So when this millage first passed, it was kind of each building was asking for what they wanted, but it was really hard to do any district-wide initiatives because we had a mix of Macintosh computers at the time, Gateway computers, and it was hard to really get a nice cohesive plan going. So we tried to get to something working together to make sure it was uniform. It's easier to support, easier to purchase curriculum. And that's where that 20% comes in, and that's part of when we dive into some of the details, we're going to explain as how we spend that money and what we're looking to bring to you for approval in May. Thanks, Kevin. In that you see, a lot of the stuff that we look at getting, it's not, we'd love to do a lot more with the millage. and we do work with other grants and other funding sources. So for instance, you don't really notice it, but we probably spend of that 20%, along with E-rate funds in maybe 31A or other district funds, close to $1 million a year, or on average $1 million a year just on big purchases. So if you look at our 20% plus some E-rate funding, it averages out to about $1 million a year. Some it's over a lease or it's in bulk purchases, but that's our average. The rest of it, like you say, is the network security is kind of bundled in. Classroom technology is kind of bundled in that. So we try to stay within our budget to end a year early. So for instance, we've had no lease commitments for probably, Cassie, almost this, at least 2 years or at least this year, past fiscal year. So that way, if we needed to use money, we weren't committed up to that last day of that funding.
Because you're talking about funds and you've mentioned, I believe, some other usage funds, what's your general fund budget for a year? I can't ever remember.
It fluctuates, but a little over $1 million, I want to say, Cassie.
Because this is technology.
This is technology.
Rate's different. Each one of those have a different pie. Mm-hmm.
So some of the software that really, when we, and that's something that's actually a good point, Darla, that the millage is technically an enhancement millage. So this should support the district's current technology initiatives. So there's some things that Cassie and I will work on that says, for instance, our phone system. We might do an 80-20 split or desktop computers. Anything that's administrative is funded by usually the district, and then classroom support of the curriculum would be technology millage. So before we move on, I wanted to just give that kind of high-level overview before we delve into the different parts. Does anyone have any questions on our funding, what we use the money for? Because this is, and I would like to say I appreciate all the reading of the board briefs because we do put a lot of information in there. Mm-hmm. But to make these purchases, there's a lot of going back and forth with vendors. What can we afford? Because we definitely have the needs, and that's what we're going to bring to you in May. And we should do a lot of stuff that we really should do, but there's a lot of wants that we just don't have the money for. So the more we can integrate it with other funding or to purchase it when stuff's on sale or leverage high volume purchases so we can get it at a discount, we try to do that.
Clarify one more time. Is it 1.7 million over the 5 years, 1.7 million per year?
Per year.
Thank you. I wasn't sure everybody understood that.
Give or take. We haven't got the final numbers this year, but that's what we're thinking. It'll be close to 1.7.
Okay.
And Dave, when does that money come into our accounts?
So first, the local taxing authorities funnel it to the ISD. Mm-hmm. They have a calculation based on headcount and FTE between the units that receive it. And then as they receive the payments from the locals, they distribute it each week to the locals. So it comes directly from the ISD into our bank accounts.
And that goes straight into the technology?
Yes, it gets coded for the revenue side of the technology millage. Yes, ma'am.
Thanks.
Any other questions before we move on to the kind of the nitty-gritty of what we're buying and how much we buy and when we buy? All right. Well, thank you. I'm going to turn it over now to Mr. Hauser, and Mr. Miracle will be working on some of the details of what we buy. And please feel free to stop at any time, ask us questions, and even, you know, David, Terry, if you guys want to jump in on some of the curriculum things, we'd be happy to have. We just really want a nice, relaxed conversation because there's a lot of big purchases coming up, and I'd want to make sure that if you have questions, really would like to know, like, what you're feeling now so we can focus that on that purchase in May.
I think the biggest thing is where does this fit with the decisions on the budget coming up? So if any of those items come up that you can clearly identify to us that these are items for which, you know, the reasoning, that would totally help us.
And these purchases that we're looking at now, a majority of them are going to be millage and maybe some grant funds. There may be a little bit coming out of the district just because, depending on it, but we would definitely articulate that so you'd know that ahead of time.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Hauser.
Excellent. Well, the first topic that of what we're going to talk about next is our student technology, and this is something that our district has been able to provide for our students for going on over 9 years now. Before 2020 and 2021 with the COVID, we had already been giving students one-to-one devices for them to use. Now, not all of them went home at that time. It was more of a middle school and high school only went home, and the elementary stayed in carts. But we did assign a device to each and every student in the district. So it was an initiative we've used for a long time. And because of that, that set a standard for many years of us to have a refresh cycle. We understood that technology does not last forever, especially in the hands of students. They do wear out. They do get broken. Things like that happen. So we have a general refresh cycle. When we look at the devices, we usually say, you know what, a student device, it's probably going to be good 4, maybe 5 years, especially with the Chromebook devices. It starts getting pushed when you go too far out just because of the quality of device you're purchasing. With that, each time we do that refresh, we generally have a target budget, and we've seen that range based on the device cost anywhere from $400,000 to $700,000 in a single year's refresh purchase. And that does depend on what we purchase. In some years, it's just devices. Another example is last year, we did just a pilot, so it was a smaller fund year. While other years, we might buy a couple years' worth of devices and get carts or something else that's needed for that student device management. As I kind of listed, our target generally in most years is to refresh 2 to 3 grade levels. That allows us to keep a steady refresh every year and not have to look at big bulk purchases in single years in most cases. With that said, as we talked last year, we did things a little bit different with a pilot program, and I'm going to talk about that in just a moment. But why do we refresh? I kind of hit on it already. Unsupported equipment's a big reason. As this equipment ages, and as curriculum advances, sometimes the versions just don't work. We've got some older iPads that we used to use in the district that just Apple stopped supporting. They just don't give you a new version of the software. So once they hit that point, somebody releases a new application and we are unable to provide it to our staff and students. So that is usually a good indicator of we need to change something. We see that on the horizon. We talk with our vendors and our reps and they let us know, hey, this device isn't supported anymore as of this date. Okay, we know what we got to do. Failing system batteries. This is mobile technology. We all have cell phones. We all know after that first year, we just see the diminished return, and it doesn't last as long. So many of our devices, we see the battery life begin to decrease. Our goal is always to provide a student with a device that can last them for the curriculum day's needs, whether that be just 1 hour or a full day of testing, like needed today with the PSAT and SAT testing that took place. A device that can last the time needed for that is important. And just the number of service repairs. As the device ages, they get more brittle, they get more aged, components begin to fail, and we see those service ticket counts start to rise, indicating something's wrong and we need to look into what we need to do. That said, we looked at that last year. What would we be seeing in our issues? And we saw a trend. Every day, we were seeing our technicians needing to fix on just student devices. This isn't teacher repairs, nothing. This is a student device, 15 to 25 of them a day. Now, that might have been a device prep, a new student added to the district, or a student lost a device and we had to give them a new one so that they were able to use it. It was a lot of them were repairs. Broken screen, broken keyboard, broken trackpad, lost charger, and just general issues. This isn't working anymore, a key popped off. We saw this large increase in our repairs, which indicated to us that we needed to change some operatings. What are we doing as a department to manage these devices?
On that regard, weren't a lot of those repairs then covered by the families so it didn't incur a cost on us?
We did initiate a program, which you are correct, which allows us to basically, we examine the device and we say, what is this break? Is this an intentional break? And then we, if we, during vandalism or it was a lost charger, we would then bill to, the building would help us assist to try to get that.
Did that offset any costs that you saw significantly, or was it really not a big impact?
It did, but not, it there was, and this depends, because there was a lot of coated that this was damaged, but some of it has not been repaid. But what it has done is slowed down the amount of, there's a process now. So as Mr. Hauser said, the first device comes in, we inspect it, we waive it. If it's not blatant vandalism, we waive the first one. The second one, there has to be a connection with the building administrator to the parent. The first one's a letter that goes home and explains it. So what it's done is it's slowed down that process. But on the third one, if there isn't repayment, they have to borrow one that's on site at the buildings. So I don't have the exact number. I don't know if...
That's okay. You do, just overall. Sorry.
I just pulled it up. So in 23-24 school year, we received $2,170 in repair restitution payments. Last school year, we received $6,193. Mm-hmm. And so far this year, we've received $3,477. So it's not a huge amount of money, but it is offsetting some of the costs of those repair parts.
Well, I think it would, the intent was what you said, to slow down and reduce as much damage as you could.
When students were doing at-home learning, we had to give people devices and to make sure they had something available. But when they came back, we had to get that tightened up, and this actually did a great job of doing that. And we have the buildings helping us on their end, but now it actually, with the devices coming back, it slowed down even more. So our device repairs have, as Mr. Hauser will show you, we went from X amount daily to, I mean, I don't want to steal his thunder, but it's improved.
Well, good. Thank you for the update.
So the two things we implemented last year were two different programs. The first one was the elementary device cart. And the second one is the Waterloo pilot program. What the elementary cart program basically did is we purchased carts last year and placed a cart in every single elementary classroom, Y5 through 6. And the devices stopped going home. They would stay in the classroom where they would maintained, charged, and monitored. That helped us to take good care of the devices and to allow, hopefully, quicker information to provide us knowledge of a broken device. This allowed us to team with the teachers to help them kind of take the ownership of which student's using which device and to help us to find out, okay, if a device was broken, which student was using that? And we can get those details very easily. We were already seeing devices not going home, but they weren't being stored anywhere was another reason for this. We were seeing schools having students leave the devices, but the chargers were left out, things were left a mess. This allowed us to consolidate it, save the students, some teachers, some space in their classroom, and allow the devices to be taken better care of. The second program we did was the Waterloo pilot. Now, the Waterloo pilot was a little bit different, where we took a different perspective of what devices we use at the full Y5 through 4 level. In previous years, we would do Y5 and K, and first grade would do iPads. And then at second grade, third, fourth, they would get a Chromebook device to prepare them for testing, to getting used to a keyboard and things of that nature. But this year, we determined that we wanted to pilot at Waterloo using the iPads. And with that, we still provided the same accommodations. The Y5 K1 devices have like a spongy case to keep them safe from drops and breaks, while the second grade, third grade, and fourth grade devices still provided the keyboard, the trackpad, but it was that Apple device. Along with that, we went to try to use the Apple ecosystem as a full. So we provided every teacher also a MacBook laptop to use in accommodation with the iPads we provided them with instruction. With that, we also worked with Apple to get on-site training. That was part of the purchase of 3 different training sessions for 3 days, where the trainer worked with 1 or 2 teachers in that day and focused on a particular curriculum piece, working with that teacher on the lesson, alongside the teacher with the lesson, to show just the power of what the Apple ecosystem could provide them. And we've seen great results because of that. This year, we've seen a reduction in those repairs. And this is district-wide, but the real part we're seeing it is at that Y5 and 6 level. So this year, we've seen a high of 15 repairs a day compared to the 25 we saw before. While we also looked deeper into those numbers, we saw that the number of repairs at the Y5 through 6 grade level reduced by 50%, which is huge. That's a lot less repairs. The other thing that impressed us is when we actually looked and saw how many repairs have we had of the devices from Waterloo, we've not received a single one. So not one device has been broken, and this is with us also checking on the carts and making sure it's just somebody not telling us a break. We've not had a single iPad broken, which gives us a good feel of the direction we should go through to in the future of what we want to do. And that leads me to what our refresh plan kind of is, and this next year of what we're doing. So this last year, 2025, as you can see, we did just a Waterloo pilot. We tested just one school, so it was a smaller expense year. That said, we feel that the direction we need to do is this next year is a little bit larger scale because we have to play a little catch up. We missed last year. We only bought one school. We didn't do three grade levels like we normally would. We didn't even buy a full grade level's worth of devices. So our vision would be that we are able to equip the Y5 through 6 with the iPad devices. We've seen the success of them at the Waterloo. We've seen how the devices maintain, they hold up better, and we also know that they have a better longevity and a return on investment. After 4 to 5 years, an iPad's still worth $100 that we could resell to offset the cost of the next refresh compared to a Chromebook, which usually we can maybe get a $10. It's just a much smaller amount of return on that after the longevity. With these devices, we also did do, with the initial purchase, we did purchase the AppleCare warranty for 4 years, which does provide us 2 repairs yearly through Apple. So a student could break the screen twice a year, and we can send it back for a full replacement free of cost to us, other than that initial investment on each device.
Kevin, as I was already spilling my pop here.
Absolutely.
See, so Waterloo would be a small population of students, correct?
That is correct.
What's the population of students?
I want to say device count today. We're probably around 120, 130 okay. devices there.
So obviously a pilot there is good. It's a small mm-hmm. school.
Yep.
But as you migrate to, let's say, Custer, mm-hmm. I would assume there would be
some breakage.
Some breakage.
We do not believe that it will be 100% no breakage, but the number will go
down. You believe it'll still be?
Absolutely, okay. Yeah. I know if I look at the numbers of breakages, we were in the hundreds of breakages at that grade level at the other buildings compared to, like I said, now we're far, or we're now, we were this year in the hundreds. We were previously in over 1,000 repairs. So the numbers at that grade level have drastically decreased.
So if I understand you, when the devices are recirculated, you have the new devices coming in, you resell the old ones?
That is correct. So we generally...
Through a broker, or how do you do that?
Usually we reach out a lot of times to different vendors. Like in instance of Apple has vendors they'll recommend to you that will give you a good price. We work with a lot of resell vendors or recycling companies who will take the devices. A lot of times they'll take them and resell them. They're not necessarily recycling them. It's more of a resale purchase. So they buy in bulk. They'll come out usually and inspect the hardware and see, these are at medium quality, these are at high quality, and give us a different range of pricing based on the quality. And we try to do this with all older technology we can to try to offset any bit we can into future purchases.
We don't always...
revenue does that generate?
It's not a lot. On the Apple ecosystem, it's more. But the reason we like the iPads is, let's say there's a budget shortfall and at 4 years we'd like to do a refresh. Mm-hmm. We can get 5, 6, 7 years out of an iPad. We're doing that now where it's functional, whereas a Chromebook, you can't get 5 years, you're having battery issues, 20% of the fleet when you bring it in, there's hinge issues. There's a lot more moving parts on a Chromebook. There's a lot more chance of a little guy to put a pencil in between it when they shut it. There's just not as much, mm-hmm. they're not as durable. So you pay a little bit more for it, but it's definitely well worth the investment. But again, it depends when we get to that refresh cycle. If we have the funding to where it's warranted to refresh them, are we gonna, what are we gonna get out of a new iPad mm-hmm. compared to what we have?
So in your chart on Y through 6, yep, with the new iPad, mm-hmm, that would be purchasing all students from Y 5 to 6 with an iPad. Is there a cost somewhere where this is, and when do you project on buying these?
So I'm going to handle that. So when we start, what we're working through with Terry and David, administrators, is what's that distribution look like? Instead of one-to-one, what's that number? So for example, in the kindergarten Wi-Fi K range, it could actually be, based on the number of students we have in a room, it may be a 2-to-1 or a 3-to-1 ratio, because they're not using, rarely are we doing where every student gets out their iPad at the exact same time, so they'd be more used about with center time, and you can see right hop in on that one. That'd be
yeah, I just wanted to point out that we would be looking at where we could have classroom share iPad carts. So there might be a cart of 25 to 30 iPads, and then two or three classes would share them. And that's not a model that is unfamiliar to our district. We have done that before.
So a lot of the research out there is coming in on the usage of technology in classrooms, and there's pros and there's cons to everything. One of the big cons that I have seen is the usage of technology in the early grades. When the curriculum is high technology based, it's finding that there may be less learning and, you know, advancement. So in the regard when we're looking at budgeting and we're looking at whatnot, would that be so? I personally think that maybe not technology at Y5 through 2, except for the technology that exists within a classroom, rather than providing students with technology for which that's what they do the work on. And I'm not suggesting they don't. Technology is around. So that would be my thing, because, you know, some people say Y through 4. I think that's a bit extreme, but.
So we this week in board briefs, I'll be sharing the results of a screen time survey. So we had our elementary teachers, Y5 to 6th grade, share with us the approximate amount of time that their students are engaged on their screen each day, and then the different tasks the students are completing while they're engaged. And it really, most of it is less than an hour a day. And when we think about some of those things, like iReady is a daily practice that we have students engage in. That was, I think, 98% of the teachers said that that was like their number one use for technology. In the lower grades, a lot of our curriculum things are software-based, but it's where the teacher is projecting the lesson up on the screen, and the students are then engaged with the lesson coming into them that way. They're not looking at their actual device for their instruction.
Well, I think that report will be helpful.
I'm excited to
I'm going to guess that there will be another conversation before this purchase goes out for buying all these iPads. Because when we're looking at budgetary items, I'm like, well, I can't imagine how much an iPad for Wi-Fi through 6, through second grade, that could be maybe something that we could look at.
You're still going to have technology in the classroom.
So I agree.
Wi-Fi kindergarten. So if you think about, like, we're all teaching kindergarten, I might have 5 iPads or 8 iPads in my room based on the number of students I have, and that's it.
Yeah.
And I use it during center time. So the idea is you're in, but it's not the true of what Monroe Public Schools has been is a 1-to-1. So as we go older, it won't be that 1-to-1.
So if you can include those numbers when some of this stuff starts coming up in front of the board, I think that would be beneficial.
And we've already started to do that. So we have what it would look like. A full one, like if we just replaced every student, you're looking at north of $1 million. But by working with Terry and Andy on some of those lower grades and how we could do that, we're now closer to the $600,000-$700,000 mark, looking at these costs. And that's a minimum of a 5-year investment. And again, you can go longer depending on the updates that Apple produces and the curriculum we have. So that's why it was hard to do it this way when it was a 1-to-1, because the students took it as they went up. So you would have to switch from an iPad to a Chromebook, and that refresh cycle looked different. Now that we're back to this model, we can buy a lump sum for the Wi-Fi through 6. They're in the classrooms, and that investment's good for the 5, 6, 7 years. and you don't have to look at that refresh cycle. Where at the secondary level, all incoming seventh graders need a device because they're leaving that iPad in the classroom.
So can those Chromebooks that are no longer going to be used at these grades be recycled for the older grades
100%.
As like backup and whatnot? Do you intend on doing that? So like I say, the data and the information prior to this purchase will be beneficial to us. And I understand this is through the technology millage, but all dollars right now really need to be accounted for. So I'd appreciate that.
Yeah, that was my question. Following along with Darla's thinking, on the assumption that this millage passes, this is going to come out of that money going forward?
It would be technology millage funds and then working with Cassie possible grant funds.
Well, I mean, not the money we have in the bank today. On the assumption the millage passes, it'll be that money that this will come out of, correct?
Yes, there is some fund balance we've built up.
Sure.
But yes, it would only be if the millage passes and it would be fitting in within the budget over the next several years.
But that fund balance could be used for some of these other big ticket items and some other repurposes. I mean, that balance that you have has a lot of uses in it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you use less of this, you can use more of this for some of the other things. So there is a way to, I know you can.
Yeah. I just want to caution the technology millage balance that's carried forward can only be used for technology millage permissible uses.
That's what they listed, yeah.
Right. So yeah. I just didn't want there to be any confusion that it could be used for anything. It does still have to be related to
the general technology fund can be.
Correct.
Yeah.
We can allocate that differently, yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. So with our refresh, as you can then see, we kind of fall into our normal 3-grade level routine after this 2026 year, to where we would just be maintaining, we always generally do 7th grade, that's the students moving first to the middle school, where those devices go home with them. It's a great time to give them a brand new device. And then we targeted some years that have our oldest devices, and that's what that graphic kind of shows. The items that are in blue are generally what that indicates is I'm replacing those students' devices, but we're utilizing devices that are from our exiting seniors or from, in the next year's instance, coming from Cantrick, actually, to move those to the students at the 7th grade to provide them a device that will be a little higher quality. The next thing is kind of hits on right what we were just talking about, which is screen time, and this is an important concern for us. Things that we've been able to do in our control within the technology department that we've implemented is one of them being the device is no longer going in the Wi-Fi through 6. So screen time at least is being limited at the school, not to when the students are at home and spending hours there. We also have applications, and I'll dive a little bit more into those in a few moments in a later slide, that allow the teachers to manage their classroom, to be able to restrict them, and so students stay on task, as well as to completely disable them and say, nope, this device can't go on the internet during this period. And this works all the way through 12th grade. So if it is an 8th grader at the middle school in a class and that teacher is doing instruction and they don't want that student getting lost somewhere in internet world, they can disable those devices so they do not work on the internet during that period. So that it is controllable at the teacher level.
Kevin, is that what the term Hapara is?
Hapara, yes.
Can you say that again?
Hapara, yes.
Hapara.
Yep. And I'll get to what Hapara, yeah, we use 2 different programs, and I'll talk about them in a minute, Hapara and Mosel.
Okay.
One works for Apple, one's going to be for Google. I think it's my next slide after this.
And that's what disables it.
That does, yes. So,
I thought so. I just want to make sure.
Absolutely, yep.
Okay.
One common tool that we use in the district is Google Classroom. It's commonly more used at the secondary level, but a little bit at the upper elementary as well. This allows teachers to be able to control instruction and provide instruction, usually again for secondary, so they can do the work at home. They can get those assignments done and turn them in. It's basically that digital area for them to communicate. A lot of colleges use applications like Blackboard or similar for similar instruction. This is what Google provides us free of service charge. That said, we do work with a vendor called Pure Data. This is a small fee. We actually looked to see if we could do this ourselves, and we would have to pay Google about $12,000 in licensing to do it. This company does it for far less for us, and they actually integrate PowerSchool in. So when a student enrolls and they're added to all their courses, they automatically get plugged into all those Google Classrooms that they are a part of. When they move on or say they transfer classes, they're removed from the one that's not relevant and added to the ones that are relevant. It also has allowed us to lock Google Classroom down to prevent students from creating their own classrooms and creating little private conversation places that could lead to bullying situations and things of that nature. So we've been able to lock that area down because of the features that Pure Data provides us at managing those classrooms for us. As you asked, Hapara and Mosel, these are our two remote management device management softwares. Mosel is for our iPad devices. It allows us to basically control the device and provide the services. The biggest things it does is it allows us to push applications as needed. If a new curriculum application is purchased or something is needed by a teacher in a certain grade level, new testing software, we can push that out to every device from a couple clicks. Compared to back in the day, we'd have to gather the devices and manually install it, which was a long, tedious process. It also, Mosel provides us our content filtering for our devices. So this is our internet protection, keeps us SEPA compliant, so that students can't get to content that is not appropriate for them. And this is what allows us to have E-Rate, is making sure we are SEPA compliant. Hapara, similar application, but this is the Chromebook level. It has some classroom management tools as well, just like Mosel, that, as I said, allows the teacher to control instruction, help keep their students on task, restricting the devices down, and still has a Google Classroom integration as well, so that way they have control of that class that they have at the time they're supposed to. They're not accidentally disabling a student's internet when they're off in another class somewhere.
Was there a cost to either one of these?
Yeah, there is a cost to each of these. I know Mosel, for a 5-year, because I was just quoting for 5 years, is about $38 for a 5 years per device. You pay per device on that application. And then Hapara, I just spoke with them the other day. I want to say for a year it is like $9 total. It's like $5 for the classroom portion and $4 for the internet content filtering per student. So that's a per student cost compared to Mosel as a per device cost.
Only because I was just in a classroom. The we're currently using Mosel, right?
If it was an iPad?
We'd be using Hapara.
Secondary, right? Would be Hapara, correct.
Okay. So how does that filter YouTube?
So
do you think it successfully filters so that there's no access because YouTube is very easily accessible between these?
You are correct. Hapara, actually, the content filter they use has an AI feature built into it. So it actually examines the content that you're viewing. So if I search Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition, it would examine those photos and or that video and blur the content that comes up that it deems is too much skin in this instance. It will prevent it from being visible. In YouTube, for instance, it'll actually blur and mute the video during those portions, and then when it determines that the video is appropriate again, it will undo that and allow the student to
proceed.
And it
would do that for the advertisements too, because sometimes they're more extreme than
correct. That. Whatever's coming through in that video is how it handles it.
And then Mosel will act the same way, but through the iPads, because that's the younger kids.
Correct. Mosel's a little bit different. It will just deny access to it.
Which it should at that grade.
Yeah.
Okay.
But very similar.
Thank you.
Great. Any other question, Kevin?
Yes, sir.
That the community would love to know. Are you guys one step ahead of these kids?
We are as far ahead as the applications allow. Sadly, every day new, they're called proxies, are built. And these are ways that people, they're similar to like, if you ever seen like those VPN commercials, and you can pretend you're in China and watch the TV shows that are shown on Netflix there. These are the tools that students use to bypass security generally. They're very difficult to track them all. The filters by default are configured that if it is a site that is not categorized, and that's how these filters work, is every site gets a category. If I go to monroe.k12.mi.us, our site, it comes up as a business or an education institution. While if I go to something like Amazon, it's going to say it's shopping. We block by category. If the site's unknown category, by default, those are blocked. So the way sometimes it gets away from you is when a site that's hosted underneath another site that gives that proxy that's categorized incorrectly. That's where sometimes issues happen. The companies are pretty quick to catch on to these and recategorize those sites appropriately, but it is you are always going to be behind whatever's happening in the moment.
I freely admit those kids are smarter than me.
They, okay?
I'm right in front of them. But I had a parent tell me that some boys wanted to look at some pictures at school, and they went in, they looked up family pictures is how they accessed it.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, I said the same thing.
It's like, not a search category I would have thought.
Well, that's why I'm asking.
Yeah.
That I'm hoping you guys are a step ahead of these kids.
Yep.
Because I know, God darn it, they're a lot smarter than I am.
We definitely do our best. We've okay, got a good team on it.
Are the remote device management, is that under that paid for the technology millage as well?
And just to clarify, that does work when the student takes it at home. So that device is bound to that. So when they go online, they're under the same restrictions and time restrictions. So at the middle school, there's a certain time of the day where that device shuts off. We don't have a restriction at the secondary, but we do at the elementary and the middle school.
So if they take it to their home, it still will not allow access to those things?
That is correct.
Yep.
Okay.
And those sites, those proxy sites, they're constantly popping and shutting down. It's a moving target. But that's, it's one of those things where you can do a search, and if you want to find something, you'll find it, but it's very minimal, and it's constantly being blocked and reopened.
I don't think they have that kind of patience, right?
Not they just grab their phone and get into trouble. Any questions on that? That was kind of the whole section on that student refresh device. From here, I wanted to move on to our network and security. We grouped these two together because they are very hand-in-hand and in tandem. The network itself is something that we examine yearly. We don't necessarily have to make changes every year. And a lot of it, we benefit from E-rate, which I'm thankful and appreciate that you passed our E-rate request this year, which is going to allow us to refresh our firewalls and our wireless. And
did you get
some
approved?
You guys approved it for us.
No, you said you had to send it.
We send it in.
Have you heard back yet?
We won't hear back from them until probably July. But,
oh, okay.
I mean, Cassie can kind of speak to how E-rate works.
So we have to submit all the information once the board approves it, and then the powers that be at USAC and the federal government review what we've submitted at their leisure. They do give us a timeline from which we have to submit it, but the timeline for when they approve it varies from project to project and what they have going on at their level.
Okay.
We have not heard back yet, and I'm not surprised that we haven't. It usually does take a little bit of, there's a good amount of time usually to hear back from them.
Thanks.
Absolutely. But with our server and our data center, normally most of our equipment is on a 5 to 10 year refresh cycle, depending on what equipment there is. And I put this slide to just give an idea of how much we support and kind of walk you through what some of the equipment is, in case I reference it later on here in this presentation. The number one thing we have is switches. And switches is that device that communicates to everything. It is where all the wires lead, inevitably goes to a switch. So every camera, every PA clock, every port you've seen on a wall, phone plugged in, those all lead to switches. So the number of physical devices we have kind of determines how many switches we need. The access points being one of those devices, as you can see, we have a good number of them. What we provide with that, we have an access point in every single classroom. We have coverage in all of our larger areas. If I go to the auditorium at the high school, I believe we have 6 or 8 of them there to help manage the number of users who might be on a mobile device in those locations.
Okay, explain access point.
Absolutely. So
I'm thinking those little wireless things that come down from the ceiling.
There's actually one right above my head here. This is an access point. And this is basically, so if you have a phone or laptop and you're connecting to the wireless, it's coming from that hardware. And these support a number of devices. Usually, I think these models can handle about 120 clients connected at one time. But it's more the density you need as you you know, they struggle going through walls. The thicker the wall, an example is Custer Elementary. Those walls are thick. That was the first building we ever put one in every room. Initially, when we did it, we were like high school, it was one every other room. We didn't have devices in every student's hand, and the wireless could cover it, and it went through those walls because they are pretty thin compared to Custer, where the walls were thicker. So the number of APs that we have, access points, reflects the need of the district. That's how many we have. And that does include some on the outside covering our onboarding and offboarding areas and some larger areas on the property. Virtual servers are servers that we have that run on our data center core. So these are, back in the past, would have been individual servers on separate hardware. Nowadays, you put them in a single box, and this one box runs multiple computers for you from one single system. So we have about 49, actually 50. I just started one up today that we're going to need for a future project. But this is a cost-effective method of having the amount of servers you need for the different services we provide. The physical servers, on the other hand, these handle bigger jobs or things that are data-heavy. Example is our security camera storage. The amount of storage you need for cameras, especially if you're keeping the 30 days, as we do, takes a lot of space. You don't want to use a high-end, expensive storage for that. You use a physical server that's a little more cost-effective for those purposes. And we've got 10 of those that we maintain in the district. Phones we put on here because, again, it's one of those devices, plugs in everywhere. We are a district that has a lot of phones, one in every classroom, one in every office, one in every basic meeting space that's needed. With our phones, we are one of the districts that also are E911 configured to kind of a higher degree. By law, I believe we're required a single number, if I dial 911, to indicate where I am within a 10,000 square foot space. We went a little step further, and we have it so every port in every room is designated to that room. So if I dial 911 from room 107 at the middle school, it reports to 911 that I am in room 107 to help our first responders respond to the exact location instead of not knowing where that call was made from in the building. On the flip side of this discussion, we have our security. And again, these are more devices that we have to provide those data ports for on those switches. We have our access control doors. So this is every door that is an exterior in the district that has one of the card swipes that you use your badge on. We currently have 244, and this does include the elevators that we renovated this last year at the middle school and the high school. We have 82 halo sensors, one in each of our bathrooms across the district, the public bathrooms, not the staff restrooms. We have 1,250 PA speakers, and we are quickly finishing that project up. They were here today doing some work, and this is one of them on the wall here, getting done with that initial installation district-wide. And then we have our cameras, and this is one I wanted to spend a moment on, is we actually have a lot of cameras, 548. That said, we used to have more. We used to have about 830 cameras district-wide, and that number's gotten reduced because of technology changing. If you've been to Custer, you'll see that we have cameras, especially at those intersections, that look different. They look like a big UFO kind of thing. And that's because that one camera device actually has four cameras in it, providing, as I kind of list them, as view angles. So we are able to reduce the number of ports that we're using, again, lowering those number of switches, lowering how much equipment we need to buy. So we're trying to be smart in how we buy the equipment in our security to help reduce the cost but increase the coverage. Get rid of any blind spots with these newer devices that help us put fewer devices out in the field.
This is only your physical facilities.
These are all of our physical facilities, yes.
Because we have the buses and all that kind of stuff.
Buses are separate. Yeah, I didn't put the bus counts. These are the physical facility cameras.
I see the word physical, which would mean that.
Yes.
But I just thought I'd ask.
Yeah, the buses, we have four cameras on each bus times number of buses, and that will give you that number pretty quickly there. About 160, 108, whatever that, I think it's about 40 buses we have. But the view angles, we've been able to increase that compared to just before when we had 800 cameras, you had 800 views. Now you've got over 1,000. With our security, again, there's a refresh cycle to it. We find the access control hardware is good for about 10 years, a little bit more. Eventually, the controller cards, the swipes, the strikes that actually operate the door wear out. The usage just happens. Some doors faster than others. PA speakers, we're speccing out to be a 10-year commitment on the speakers at minimal. This is a newer hardware to us in the network world. Older technology that was all based on speaker wire. We anticipate a minimal of 10 years on these. Security cameras, 5-7 years refresh cycle on those, usually due to changes in technology or just the wear and tear of the elements. Outdoor cameras wear out quicker. The weather does its job.
The increase in fiber optics and the laying of that, is that associated with any of these things going on?
Not with these, but I could talk on that really quick. So we are working with the ISD, and it was an E-rate Category 1 project that the ISD is doing to add some redundant fiber connections between some buildings. So they were doing it for between the different districts to help in case a strong storm came and knocked down a fiber line, districts could stay in communication. We jumped in with them on that project and have added some redundant paths to some other locations. The high school, Custer, Monroe Middle School, Raisinville, and Manor.
And those are all underground.
Yep,
right.
They're all underground, and we're actually working on that project right now. We had, they were actually in yesterday. I know if you saw, probably in the back parking lot the last week or so, there was a big black cable spooled up on a piece of property there. And they've been to some of our other buildings getting that done. We actually have them working at the middle school this upcoming weekend. And the last thing on this is the VSM server, which is our video management servers. These are those physical, some of those physical servers I spoke about earlier. Those go about 5 years, and then they fall out of warranty. And then if they break, you're going to spend more in parts and to repair them than it would be if you took action sooner than later. With our security camera refresh, I wanted to give you a little history to share with you, just the time we've been spending to get everything up to date. We started in 2022 on our refresh to remove our old cameras with newer cameras that have these multiple views. So we did the high school in 2022, middle school Waterloo, and those servers came in 23. 24 was Custer and Orchard. Last year we did Canebush, Cantrick, and Hollywood. And this year we're going to be hopefully bringing to you in May, will be Manor and Raisinville. And then following up, the following year would complete the cycle. That would be all buildings completed over that time span. And then from there, we would look at what we need to do next, whether it be access control or whatever project.
And these are all covered by the millage?
We have a district security budget, and we try to fall within that security budget.
That's not part of the technology fund. Would you call it district?
It's the district security. It's out of the... We set aside, actually Cassie set aside some funds years ago, or even Kathy Amy, when we started to have more need for security. And that's what we use yearly, depending on what that budget is. Some of our security software is also taken out.
So what does that fund hold as a regular, and how does it get replenished?
It's just a general fund.
Yeah. It's just a general fund allocation.
So it comes out of general fund line.
Yes, ma'am.
So it's not a separate.
No.
It's just a separate budget code for security.
But there's no
offsetting funding.
Okay. You get $1 million a year. It's as needed out of the general fund. Am I right?
Dave and I kind of work together to figure out an amount that's needed on a year-to-year basis for security updates, and I try and build that into the budget.
We have any idea approximately what we spend on?
It's about $200,000 we try to stay.
A year? Okay. Thank you.
Excellent. Any other questions on the network and the security side?
Maybe this is a discussion for a closed session, but there's been a lot of data breaches lately with different corporations. What's our confidence in our system as far as protecting?
Extremely high. We use CrowdStrike, was one of the top tier companies for that. And they've caught a lot of things happening really quickly.
A year ago, didn't they have a big breach?
They did.
It wasn't a breach. They had an update failure.
Yeah. Okay.
They had pushed out an update,
right,
and it broke a bunch of airlines.
Everybody shut down because of that.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we've taken a lot of precautions. So one of them is using CrowdStrike. Another is making sure we have a solid backup regime. Mm-hmm. So right now, all of our data is instantaneously replicated to the high school. every evening it's backed up to the high school.
Okay.
And then every evening it's also backed up off-site to Grand Rapids where there's immutable backups that cannot be altered. It'd be very extremely hard.
So if we have a ransomware attack, we can shut down and reboot.
Yep.
And we also do still maintain cybersecurity insurance coverage if we were to have some sort of incident that required that.
And in that world, do you do any form of simulation of attack?
We don't do an actual simulation of attack, but I know CrowdStrike, we have been using them, and actually the state just, I think they won the bid, so pretty much the entire state of education uses CrowdStrike. They handle that very well. What we do is we make sure we do protocols that check our backups. We do restores. We check our replicas and our snapshots at our high school to make sure that data is there and viable and to make sure we have enough space. One of the things Mr. Hauser's looking into is, and we've done this before, but the cost is so high to actually have a disaster recovery system right. in place to where you have chunks of storage and chunks of server set aside that you can spin up within minutes or hours. But that cost goes up as it goes from days to minutes, you know, to hours. What we found is you pay for all this equipment and it's over time, it's really not worth. What we can do though is, for instance, if we were to have a disaster, right. let's just say, our offsite backup in Grand Rapids, we could call that company for a price. They could spin up our servers. But we're also looking at possibly putting some of our servers in the cloud and having a system set up. MI Cloud's allowing schools for a free cost for like year one to try it and then to see if it's worth it going up. The problem is, based on the server, everything's calculated by bandwidth. So if it's a very high access server, the cost is higher. Right. So, but we do have a contingency plan to where we could spin servers up, but we're not prepaying for that because we did set that up, and it's probably, I don't know what it'd be now due to the memory cost, but if let's say you spend $1 million on network infrastructure, you would probably spend 30% of that to have that DR site because you essentially have to have a replica and you have to have enough space to handle that. So if you need 50 terabytes of active working space, you need to have a portion of that ready to go at a moment's notice. So what companies are doing is they're paying companies, data centers, to say, carve me out a space, set me up a price, and then if I need it, based on this price, I can have it within minutes, this price with hours, days. And, you know, we're obviously a school. We don't have unlimited funding. So
right.
we just have to I think for us, and maybe if the board would want us to look into that, but it would be a significant cost to have that on standby.
Yeah, I would be curious what the continuity, what the levels of continuity you would what you
with
would
having
pay for.
That backup at the company we use right now with Element 4, they have the capacity to spin up servers at a cost very quickly. Okay. So all of our infrastructure's in Grand Rapids backed up, but you could turn that into active servers if you needed to.
And we say, are we saying days? Or are we saying?
Depends. They can do it.
Okay.
It's just how much we want to spend to get it up. I would say, in actual, you're looking at a couple of days to do that where it's not ridiculous. But insurance would cover part of that as well.
Okay. Are those cloud services what the state has? Would it be going through the state cloud services that they have or something different?
This is a program. I'm not sure if it's through the state, but I'm not sure if the state, if it's more of an educational thing. One of the things Mr. Hauser's working on is going away from paying for a backup service to utilizing something the state's offering schools to try that at a free or reduced cost.
I had that in one of my other notes for today was if we're storing everything in state sources, who maintains the data and are people aware of that?
Yeah, and everything is encrypted in a form that isn't easily obtained when you back that up.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions on that topic? Okay, I'm going to turn it over to my assistant here, Joe Miracle. He's going to talk to you guys about the building technology.
I did not know I was assistant.
You're my assistant now.
First of all, because I don't
I haven't met a lot of you guys, but just to tell you a little bit about myself, my name is Joe Miracle. I actually worked here for 15 years, took a couple years off. Cindy brought me back. I think she brought me back to agitate Dave, but I'm not sure. I thought maybe that was it. And one other thing, so when I did come back, the one thing I can tell you, I've been back for a year, and there is a difference in the district than when I left. And it's a big difference. And it's, you guys have been here, and you maybe you went through it, but I went from going from point A to point B, and it's just like there's a big difference. It's nice. Okay. It's really more positive than it was before, and it's good to be back. I'm glad to be back. So anyways, I want to go through a couple things right here. I'm going to talk about building technology. I want to say also as well, Kevin had 24 slides. I have 6 slides. And I don't know if it's on purpose or not, Dave, but I got a feeling when I'm done, everyone's going to say, we know why he only had 6 slides. But anyways, so I want to talk a little bit about the building technology. Where the technology is, what the technology is, and what is the status of the technology. So we have, in our elementary classrooms, basically we have 146 setups, desktop setups, 168 in secondary, 73 support, and 72 in office locations. So as far as the classrooms go, all these are set up the same way. We have a teacher desk that we bought from Spectrum, so it's a very specific teacher desk. We have a desktop computer, 24-inch monitor, audio system with a mic, a wireless mic that the teacher can go around, talk to the class or even share it with the students. And we have wireless presentation device as well. The secondaries actually have TVs, 82 to 85-inch TVs. And all of the elementaries, they have smart boards and projectors. And I kind of got ahead of myself there, what I was going to talk about here. They also have document cameras, which are really nice to display. The teachers can display things to the board, and they can actually share that with the student, too. I've seen a lot of teachers do that. And that's really nice to have the students interacting with the technology and the teacher.
Do you have all those numbers somewhere that he just went through?
As far as the slide?
It's out of order. So when you talked about smart boards and stuff, mm-hmm. that would be your secondary classrooms have 168 smart boards?
The smart boards are in the elementary classrooms, and those are smart boards and projectors.
Doesn't tell you.
I don't think the slide says what specific between the elementary, but the one slide did have the number of.
Yeah, it said
how many rooms there are, and there's one of those in every one of those.
So in secondary, there's 168 classrooms, therefore there would be 168 smart boards in use. Okay.
TVs in that instance.
TVs.
Yeah, they're TVs. So nope.
Elementary's got the smart boards, 146.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and the projectors. Yep.
And when we get closer to the recommendation, we'll make sure we have all of those numbers.
Yeah.
So you'll have each technology, the amount, age, stuff like that.
Because I would think secondary would be looking for some smart boards at some point. Not really?
Not so much. But okay. there is sometimes there's a request for it. But it's more as a specific type of teacher.
Okay, so with those devices, like I said, every classroom, elementary classroom is set up the same. So every teacher has the same equipment. Every secondary, same way as well. So it's very fair and everyone knows where they're going. They can go from one room to another, and it's going to be identical. So that's as far as the hardware goes. For the software, we have classroom management software. You already mentioned Hapara. That's some software that the teachers can actually manage student devices with. We actually have on our computers, we have a program called Enable. And Enable allows us to connect into the computer as well and manage so we don't have to go out to the building. So we can manage that teacher computer remotely, and it saves a lot of time, and it gets the classroom going really quickly if there are any issues. All the desktops have curriculum applications, presentation software. So the hardware we have, like I said, the DocCam and the smart and the smart boards, those all have software with them. And that's all installed on your desktop computers.
So the curriculum applications, are they those little squares on the screen that they use, or is this something different? I know, that's a technology term, the little square.
Yes, the squares can be shortcuts to applications on the devices.
But not all those applications are funded through the technology.
Some are directly through curriculum, some are free resources online.
And they would be purchase services, right?
Yep, or some are just free. It's free links to websites. That's what's nice about the management is a teacher, a curriculum coach could say, you know, we'd like this shortcut pushed out to all fifth grade devices, and we can do that.
Okay, and then as classroom software changes, that's one of the reasons why we would have to refresh our hardware because of different demands that the software is requiring. So that would be another thing why we would have to look into refreshing our devices, which brings us to the refresh cycles. So this is just a generalization, and I'll go in a little bit more of how we make it more specific. So desktops, roughly you're going to get 5 years out of those. The displays, 7 to 10 years. Voice amplification, 10 years, accessories, keyboards, stuff like that, 5 to 10 years. Now, these aren't numbers, those are generalized numbers. What we do every single summer is we go into every single classroom, we touch every single device, we clean them, we test them, we update them, we make sure everything's working really well. So at the end of that summer maintenance cycle that we do every year, we have a pretty good idea of what we're going to need next year. Because, hey, we're having some problems, for example, the elementaries with their projectors. These are constantly used, and they wash out. You know, the screens are not always as crisp. Well, we can say, we rated the projectors. Okay, this is a 2 rating, a 3 rating. We know we're going to have to get these replaced pretty soon. And as far as the elementaries go, that's kind of where we're at with the projectors and the smart boards. We have projectors and smart boards dated back to 2019. So those are getting to the point where we do need to look into refreshing them. Did anyone have any questions so far? No? So our refresh focus is what we've determined is that we need to refresh all of our desktops, secondary and elementary. They're just getting old, they're getting slow. We're replacing power supplies. So what's really showing us that they need to be replaced is the maintenance we have to do on them. We're replacing power supplies, we have to go out and reseat memory. They're costing us money now to maintain them. So those are a priority. We did a survey, and I'll talk a little bit about the survey. We did a survey and asked the teachers, would you like laptops for your classroom device or desktops? And they overwhelmingly select desktops because of the reliability, but they're not reliable if we don't keep maintaining them and refreshing them. The elementary classroom displays. I already talked about the smart boards, the projectors, those are really old. We've been testing 3 different devices. The smart boards, we have the Waterloo Pilot, which went really well, and the devices are really sharp. We're testing a BenQ device, and we're testing a Clever device. And we're getting some data and getting some information on which is going to be the best and which is going to be the most affordable as well.
Are they all different products?
They're all different models. They're all different vendors. So it's BenQ, they make their own device. Clever is a specific model. And Smart makes the boards.
We're
talking
about the smart boards.
I should say. So smart TVs are smart boards. It can be a general term.
Okay.
But they're interactive TVs is what I should say. They're all interactive TVs, different brands of those.
Okay, thank you.
That's really going to be the primary at the elementaries. We have refreshed TVs already at the secondaries. We have refreshed the amplifiers, the audio systems as well at the secondary. That's the third thing we really need to do at the elementaries is the audio systems. And those get used a lot. And that's one of the things we have our survey that we had. So we know a refresh is coming up. So what's the logical thing to do? We're going to do a survey. We're going to get some data. We're going to get some information from the teachers. So we did the survey. And like I said already, one of the most important things was the desktop to the teachers. It's the nerve center of the classroom. That desktop goes down, they're out of luck. We don't want that. Once again, document cameras are used quite a bit heavily by staff. It seems like it's a device that they really liked. It helps with student engagement, and so does the interactive TVs. That's one thing that they really seem to be interested in as well. Now, one thing that I really liked is one of the questions we had was, if we provided you new technology, would you be willing to receive training? Because sometimes in technology, we get excited about all this new stuff, and we don't provide the training, or the teachers don't get the training, and it's just a TV there. They don't know how to use it. 97% of the people who responded said they would be willing to accept that training. So that's really important. So I think that's all I have. Do you guys have any questions? No?
Thank you.
Okay, yep, you're welcome.
Thank you, Joe.
I'm back. So with all that and that information, we kind of wanted to share with you what the roadmap is for what are we looking at for this next year? What are you expecting to see us come to you for? And in the spring and summer of this current year, we've got a few major projects, a few things that we feel are vital. For network purchases, what we're talking about here are two particular servers that we need desperately. They're both physical servers. The first one is a backup server. Our current backup server that is used with the Element 4 solution is an older system. It's not supported anymore. Hasn't been under warranty for about a year. And this device is aged. We had a hard drive fail on it just recently. We had to order a replacement of that. This is a vital, important piece of technology that we utilize. It is our on-site backup. Yes, we have the backup in the cloud, but having that on-site just makes things faster if we have to restore something for a user or if a disaster did take place. The second server we're looking for is what we refer to as our Tier 2 storage. This server is for kind of the public documents that we keep as a district. So files that are shared from year to year to year that aren't necessarily my specific document files, it's my department's files. It's also some larger files and things for like media files, older presentations, files that we've kept and want to retain for years. That's where these are stored. Again, this is the same issue. It is an older server that we do want to replace and renew. As for the staff refresh, this is kind of what Joe just presented. This was the classroom refresh. Our primary focus is going to be on the desktops. With that, we're taking a lot of factors into consideration, especially the cost of memory. As many of you probably heard, with the AI data centers and things like that, has caused memory to skyrocket. We had actually quotes on desktops where they went from $600 now to $800. That affects the number of devices we can purchase. So we're trying to be very mindful of that, knowing that there are restrictions on funding. So we're trying to evaluate the most important thing first, and the desktop, that's why we made that primary number one. Followed by, if funding's available, let's look at those elementary screens, followed by those voice amplification systems. Student refresh, the presentation I gave on that, where we're looking at the Wi-Fi through 6 Chromebook, or iPad devices, I apologize. The iPad devices, looking at what that refresh looks like, going with the shared model at those lower grade levels to hopefully reduce the count of devices, and going with the iPads that we know are going to be good 5-6 years down the line and get good longevity out of it, as well as the possibility of being able to use them as partial funding sources towards the next refresh, because they'd still retain that value. And then lastly is the security refresh. I alluded to that of the two buildings we're looking to do. These are our last two education facilities that need that refresh. Manor, which this is a great time to do it because of the bond work taking place there. We're going to have to add new cameras there for part of it anyways with the construction. But that way we can get a refresh there and get those new areas covered as well as some blind spots. And then Raisinville, which is the other building that needs that refresh. We already have put one or two new cameras out there based on some security needs of that facility. But we need to get the whole site done, and we're looking at that site as well. In addition to that, there are a few odd and end cameras we're looking for, mainly some longer lensed cameras that will give us some coverage of our parent loops. So at Custer, Manor, Raisinville, where we have those new parent loops that we've put in the last few years, that way we can have a camera that's kind of covering those in case something happens out there that we need to have that footage for. In the following year, We would be looking at the data center refresh. This is the big one where it is what's managing that virtual environment. These are the virtual the servers that manage that. There's two large servers that do that. And then we have some servers that provide us our, it's called VDI, they're virtual desktops. We use those in the district and some of our labs, but it was very heavily used to allow staff and students to connect into that Windows experience from home, from their Chromebooks, from an iPad. They can get that Windows experience from any device, which is great.
So that's all like virtual programming.
Correct. It's virtualization of computers, is basically.
Right. So are you looking at enhancing that or just...
It's a replacement. It's a refresh.
It's a replacement of what we currently have.
That is correct. The systems we have already are legacy. There are some of the pieces that actually we cannot extend our warranty through Cisco, which is the vendor who provides the hardware. The equipment that we are dependent on, we spoke to our vendor the other day, and they let us know the end of life of them is about a year and a half from now. That's when Cisco will stop supporting the hardware. So they would not have the ability for me to even pay them for an extension of our managed supported contract.
Kevin, real quick, just to step in. With the virtualization, we're looking at probably over the next 2 years when we do replace this, about an 80% reduction as the need is lessened. So a lot of our remote access for students, the need isn't there. So it's more of... one or two students as opposed to a class. As we talked with Ms. Morelli today in the CT department, we have the ability for students to remote in to access higher end programs to run. So we're looking if that need continues or do we need to just put in a desktop and have that software locally. But the need is definitely reduced. And when we look at this refresh, we're looking at probably up to an 80% reduction in that technology.
So this would be for like the virtual school? Is that?
No, this would be if, let's say you're a teacher and you want to work on files the same you would if you're in a classroom, you have that ability. But it's not, the demand isn't there like it was 5 years ago, years ago.
So it has nothing to do with anything like that?
The virtual program has dedicated cloud resources, web-based resources. Now the students could still log in if they needed to, but most of it's all cloud-based, web-based access.
And only because the terminology is out there. Have you always called it a data center?
We were doing that to confuse you.
I know. I thought, a little bit different. Good job. Thank you.
No. The data center, the reason we changed that from just like servers or server room, the network infrastructures, like Mr. Hauser said, switches, your network, your routers, stuff like that, your firewalls, where your data center now is not just a physical server. It's a physical server that might house 40 virtual servers or other programs. So it's more, data center is more of a applicable term for what we're going to do.
It's higher storage.
So it's a little bit of everything plus servers. It's not just a server anymore.
Yeah, I did catch that.
Yeah, they've gotten more complicated.
Right.
But yeah, the data center, it is a big piece of what we need. It is to maintain what we're doing today at the service level. But as Dave did allude, there are a lot of things that we're able to reduce on. So the cost, if we don't have to buy one-to-one of what we have today. We'll have to buy something that is a little lower end, which is
good. But we already have it. You already have what you call a data center.
We have it now. But, for instance, right now we have the capacity for 400 students and or staff members to remote in and have a virtual desktop like they would be sitting here right now on a computer. We don't have that need anymore. So what instead of replacing it and spending, you know, $1 million on servers, we might have to spend considerably less. Okay. We're going to match the need and the demand based on what we need currently.
That's just a new concept to me, yep. So thank you.
The second part that we would be looking in 2027 would be continuing that classroom staff refresh. If we weren't able to complete it all in 2026, we'd be looking for the other pieces that we're looking for, maybe the voice amplification or completing the screens if it wasn't cost effective in this upcoming year. Security refresh, we would continue that refresh strategy, moving on to Fenmore, the administration building in Riverside, to complete the district-wide refresh of our security cameras. And then the last one is the student refresh. This would be continuing on in that plan, So after this year doing the Y5 through 6, then the following year, I believe, was 7th, 8th, and 11th graders to refresh their devices to help eliminate the oldest of the Chromebook devices that the district has and keep us running with more relevant and current technology in the students' hands. Any questions on that? Okay, I'm going to turn it back over to Mr. Payne.
And I would like to thank Mr. Hauser and Mr. Miracle. There was a lot of work that went into this, and as well as their teams, researching, talking to vendors while we're still supporting the district. So this isn't something we do take lightly, and I know you know that. But we do try to spend every dollar efficiently, and we try to match the technology we're going to purchase with the need. And we review that with Ms. Joseph, Mr. Malo-Epsi, to make sure, like, hey, what are we doing, what's going to match the needs of the district for the next 5 years? So I thank you both for that, and appreciate all your hard work on that.
And we appreciate the information because we have a lot of decisions to make. So we
any time you have a question, let Mr. Shaw know that we would love to make sure you understand what the purchase is and why we're doing it. Mm-hmm. So when we do make a recommendation, it's a recommendation that you support. We want to present something that you want to support.
Thank you.
So, Dave, since we're down to 10 minutes left, I'm going to give you 5 minutes to bypass the sinking fund and the bond and just talk in terms of around how we're designed now with our operations department. So you have five sure. minutes to talk about that. So you want to slide down to slide 39 quickly.
There you go. All right. So one of the things I really want to stress is we have a great team, and we try to integrate operations with custodial maintenance and technology. One of the things that, you know, us as a team have always stressed is when we do a project, there's need for maintenance, there's need for custodial. Just over spring break, literally the synergies and the communication with fiber guys or Cohen and Custer, they left some tracks, let's get a hold of custodial to do a cleanup. Maintenance has got to fix the door. Like, there's such a close-knit efficiency if we're all on the same page. So one of the things we did last year was upgrade all of our ticketing system to be integrated, whether you're custodial, maintenance, or technology, even events. And that's really helped us to kind of get together. And one of the things that we thought to do this year, and we just started this as of September, was to have our help desk 6 to 6, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., and they are there for custodial maintenance or technology services. So anytime somebody sees a leak, whether it's a custodian, whether it's a technology person, whether it's a staff member, they can call that number, and help desk can put that ticket in and route it appropriately. And also monitor tickets. One of the things we noticed too is tickets would go in and just sit because it's not an easy fix. So we really worked well together, and kind of my goal is really to move custodial maintenance and technology back under the upper operations umbrella. And it's really been great. We have meetings together with custodial maintenance management teams. We talk about projects. One of the projects that really tipped it for me, and this was a few years ago, was we ordered a brand new door. And one of our projects through technology was to set up access control for Sodexo. So we put a brand new door in, immediately took off the motor and put in a different one. And it was just, to me, I'm like, how are we not talking together? And that's when I determined that we can't do this anymore. There's too many efficiencies, and we've come along. We got a long way to go, but the team we've put together has really been great to work together. And I think having this, there's so much need in the district for us to communicate. And that was the goal of kind of bringing everyone together. So going forward, if you just move through real quick, because I have 1.6 minutes left.
And you oversee all that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So in our custodial department, we have general cleaners, which is what you would think is a custodian, but we also have team cleaners. So at our high school and some other buildings is we've reduced the number of cleaners, but they're faster paced at a premium. They get extra money for this, but they go through and they each have tasks. So maybe I'm working with this person and we're gonna do upper A, upper B, and upper C, and we're checking each other's work. We're both working on bathrooms. So we're able to do that building at a faster pace and maybe at a reduction in staff. And the reason we really went that direction is one of the things I found out when I took over is, let's just take Raisinville Elementary. At night, there's two custodians in there. And I'm like, what if one of them calls in sick? I gotta do the whole building? So this way, it's much less defeating as a team when you have six or eight people and you drop one or two even. So we've moved to that team cleaning. The other thing we've done in the custodial side is projects and event support. So on the weekends, we might have four custodians working on a Saturday or Sunday. Two will be covering the event, but two are doing project cleaning. Like we might have to do doorways, the windows, catch up on stuff that can't be done during the week. So it's really helped by changing the structure of the department. Kevin, the next one, please.
But the turnover rate and the custodians, is it more in each of those categories? Is it kind of just spread around?
It's really just kind of, I hate to say it, it's we pay a decent amount of money, but it's people get jobs, and if they can get a job with benefits or closer to home, it's not a forever job.
So it's not one of those categories that you're seeing a higher turnover in that you just listed?
Well, it's hard to say.
The project team sounds like it's more demanding, and I was just wondering if that had a higher turnover.
We have less turnover for the team cleaners and for the project and the team leads, but there has been some turnover there too, but not as much.
Okay.
And we're starting to slow down now as well. I think now that we have a good ecosystem and the proper training, people don't feel like they're just getting thrown into a building, and we want to work with them. They're getting help, and they're not being left alone.
That would definitely help if that would slow down.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And with our maintenance, just so you know, we have grounds. We have general maintenance that's in the buildings and throughout the district in our skilled trades department. We do have one or two college students that come back and help with mowing or special projects as well. And then on our technology department, real quick, we have our 24/7 and on-site support. That's what Mr. Miracle's over. Mr. Hauser's the network security in the print shop. And then Mrs. Ford is our help desk. So we have about four people on our help desk, ranging from 6 o'clock, like I said, until 6. And they also do our onboarding. So when a staff member comes in, we give them their device, we sit down with them for 30 minutes, we get their badge, we show them how to use their alarm code, their technology. Go over where printers are, where the exits are in a building. So it's a quick onboarding process. And if you have any more questions about our structure, we'll include some of that in board briefs. And again, I want to thank everyone for their time this evening. And sorry it took us just a little bit longer, but we appreciate it.
Well done in your 6 minutes.
All right. Thank you.
Well done. Thank you, sir. Okay.
Yeah. Brian, any public commentary tonight?
No.
Okay, thank you. That completes our agenda for the work session. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Do I have support?
Support.
Just a show of hands. The Monroe Public Schools Board of Education work session for Tuesday, April 14th, 2026 is adjourned. The time is 6:57.